Hey, listeners, and welcome back for another deep dive. Today, we're going to be looking at a Louisiana case that went all the way up to the state Supreme Court, Duncan versus Kansas City Southern Railway. It's really a story about tragedy, negligence, and ultimately a lot of money at stake.
Yeah, this case is fascinating. It really digs into how the law tries to figure out who's responsible when a terrible accident happens, especially at, you know, railroad crossings. And then there's the whole thing about how judges interpret the law and how, you know, sometimes their own personal beliefs can influence the outcome.
Okay, so set the scene for us. Where does all this start?
All right, so picture this. Rural Beauregard Parish, Louisiana. We're at this railroad crossing, but it's what they call a passive crossing, meaning it's just got a stop sign and a crossbuck, you know, those X-shaped signs that say railroad crossing. No flashing lights, no gates, which, as you can guess, becomes a big deal in this whole story. Now, it was at this crossing on September 11th, 1994, that a church van with three sisters inside gets hit by a train going almost 50 miles an hour.
Oh, man, that's terrible. What happened to the sisters?
It was really bad. One of the sisters, she didn't make it. Another sister, Rachel, she ended up quadriplegic. And the third sister, thankfully, her injuries weren't as serious.
I see. So what happened next? Did the family sue?
Yeah, they did. The parents of those sisters went after Kansas City Southern Railway, we'll call them KCS for short, and their argument was all about negligence. They said KCS didn't do what they should have done to keep drivers safe at that crossing.
Okay, so what specifically did they say KCS did wrong?
Well, their lawsuit really focused on two main points. First, they said KCS didn't clear out the vegetation along the tracks, which meant the driver couldn't see the train coming. And there's actually evidence to back this up. Some court documents show that even KCS knew there were problems with being able to see at this crossing.
Wow, so they knew it was a dangerous spot and they didn't do anything.
That's exactly what the family was arguing. The second part of the lawsuit was about the warning signs. They claimed that just having a stop sign and crossbuck wasn't enough, especially considering how dangerous that crossing was. They thought KCS should have installed flashing lights and those gates that come down.
Ah, yeah, the whole passive warnings versus active warnings debate.
You got it. Passive warnings, they're just signs. Active warnings, like lights and gates, they grab your attention a lot more, so they're much more likely to prevent an accident.
Okay, so what did the jury think about all this? Did they side with the family?
Well, the jury's decision was interesting. They decided that both KCS and the driver of the van, Mitchell, are liable. They put 68.4% of the blame on KCS and 31.06% on Mitchell.
So they did think KCS was mostly to blame, even though the driver was also held responsible. What about the damages? How much were we talking here?
The total damages the jury awarded came out to nearly $28 million.
Oh, that's a huge number.
It is. And a big chunk of that $17 million was specifically for Rachel's future medical expenses. They also awarded her another $8 million in general damages. You know, that's for pain and suffering and the overall impact this accident had on her life.
Yeah, that makes sense. It sounds like the jury really understood what Rachel and her family were going through. But I'm guessing KCS didn't just accept this verdict, right?
You're right on the money. They appealed immediately. And this is where things get really interesting because you guessed it, the case went all the way to the Louisiana Supreme Court. Welcome back. So before we left off, we were talking about that big $28 million verdict and how both the railroad and the driver were found liable. But as you might imagine, things get even more interesting once the case hits the Louisiana Supreme Court.
Yeah, I bet. So what happened at the Supreme Court? Did they just agree with what the jury decided?
Well, sort of. They did uphold KCS's liability. So yeah, they agreed that the company was negligent. But here's the twist. They changed how much each party was to blame.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
So they still said KCS was at fault, but maybe not as much as the jury thought. That's interesting. Why did the Supreme Court change things up?
Well, they put a lot of emphasis on the idea that drivers have to be really careful at railroad crossings. They used something called the Watson factors to figure out who was at fault and by how much.
Watson factors? I've never heard of those.
Right. So basically, they're these guidelines that courts in Louisiana use to divide up the blame when multiple people are involved in an accident. Things like, did each person know there was a danger? How much could they have done to avoid the accident? That sort of thing.
Got it. So after looking at those Watson factors, what did the Supreme Court decide?
They ended up switching things around quite a bit. They put 66.67% of the blame on the van driver, Mitchell, and only 33.33% on KCS.
Wow, that's a big change. What about all that money? You know, that huge $28 million award. Did the Supreme Court have anything to say about that?
Oh, they definitely did. And this is where things get really interesting from a legal perspective. Let's start with those $17 million for Rachel's future medical expenses. The Supreme Court said there were a couple of problems with how the jury got to that number.
Okay, what were the issues?
Well, first, when the jury calculated how much Rachel would need for future medical care, they assumed she would live to be 81. But the defense, they brought in some experts who argued that a more realistic lifespan, given her injuries, was more like 57 years. And the court agreed that 81 was probably a bit too optimistic.
That makes sense. What was the other problem?
Well, the jury didn't consider something called present cash value. Basically, money you get today is worth more than money you get years from now because you can invest it and make more money off of it.
So the court was basically saying, hey, you need to be realistic about how long Rachel might need medical care, A&D. Consider how the value of money changes over time.
Right, exactly. It's not just as simple as adding up all the potential medical bills, but there's more.
More.
Yeah.
There's even more to this.
Yeah, that $8 million that was awarded to Rachel for general damages, things like pain and suffering and emotional distress, that caused even more debate among the justices. The majority on the Supreme Court, they thought it was too much compared to similar cases they had seen in the past.
Oh, really? So did they lower it?
They did, but, and this is really interesting, one of the justices, Justice Null, she wrote what's called a dissenting opinion, where she really pushed back on the idea of comparing what a child goes through with quadriplegia to cases involving adults. She felt like the majority didn't really get how serious and long-lasting the impact on Rachel would be.
Yeah, I can see your point. It sounds like there was some real disagreement within the Supreme Court about how to handle these damages.
Absolutely. And these different opinions, they kind of reveal something even bigger, a clash of judicial philosophies. You have some justices who are hesitant to overturn what juries decide. They believe in something called judicial restraint, which basically means letting lower court decisions stand unless there's a very good reason to change them.
So they're saying we should respect the jury's role.
Right. But then you have justices like Justice Null who are more willing to step in and make changes when they feel like the verdict isn't really fair or doesn't follow the law properly.
This is getting really fascinating. I'm starting to see how this case goes way beyond just a tragic accident. It really makes you think about how our legal system works.
You hit the nail on the head. This isn't just about who was at fault and how much money they had to pay. Duncan versus Kansas City Southern Railway really gives us a glimpse into the core of the legal system, how judges deal with really complex issues, how legal precedent is set, and how different interpretations of the law can actually change the whole outcome of a case.
It makes you realize the huge responsibility that judges have.
Yeah.
But what about the practical implications? How does this case impact, lawyers and everyday people?
That's a great question, and one we're going to dig into right after this.
And we're back, continuing to look at this really interesting case, Duncan versus Kansas City Southern Railway. Before we left off, we were just starting to talk about some of the bigger things that come out of this case.
Right. I mean, there are some really important takeaways here, not just for lawyers, but really for anyone who might end up in a similar situation. And unfortunately, these things do happen.
Yeah, that's true. So let's get into that. What are the key lessons from Duncan versus KCS? What really makes this case stand out, you think?
One big thing that this case really shows us is this idea of federal preemption. It's a bit of a legal term, but basically what it means is that sometimes federal laws kind of override state laws.
Okay, I'm following. How did that come up in this case?
Well, so KCS, they tried to argue that because the warning devices at that crossing were put in back in the 1980s, and back then the federal government often helped pay for those kinds of things, they should be judged by federal standards, not state laws. They were basically saying, look, we followed the rules the feds set, so you can't hold us liable under state law.
Oh, I see. That's a clever argument. But did it work?
The Supreme Court didn't buy it. They said there wasn't enough proof to show that federal money was actually used for the warning devices at this specific crossing.
Ah, so you can't just say federal money might have been involved. You have to actually prove it.
Yeah, exactly. And that's a super important thing for lawyers to remember when they're working on similar cases. You've got to be really careful to figure out where the money for those warning devices came from. It can really make a difference.
So documentation is key. Seems like that's a recurring theme in this whole case.
Definitely. Another big takeaway from Duncan versus KCS is how important expert witnesses are, especially when you're dealing with a really serious injury like Rachel's. Remember how there were those different opinions about how long she might live?
Yeah, right. The jury thought she'd live to 81, but the defense expert said more like 57. That's a huge gap.
It is. And having really good experts who can explain things like life expectancy, future medical needs, and all the costs that come with that can be a game changer in these kinds of cases.
It sounds like finding the right experts is just as crucial as putting together a strong legal argument.
For sure. And let's not forget the big elephant in the room. Those damage awards. The Supreme Court really shook things up there, didn't they?
They did. What were those final numbers again?
Right. So the jury originally said $17 million for Rachel's future medical costs and then another $8 million for general damages, like pain and suffering.
And that's what KCS appealed, right?
Yep. So the Supreme Court, they lowered the future medical expenses to $10.5 million. They took into account those problems we talked about, you know, with the life expectancy and the missing present cash value calculation.
Yeah, all those financial details really matter.
They do. And then the general damages, those got lowered to $6 million. Still a lot of money, of course, but it just shows how complicated it is to try to put a price tag on something like suffering, you know?
And we can't forget Justice Knowles' dissent, where she argued so strongly that you can't really put a price on what Rachel and her family experienced, no matter how much money you award.
Absolutely. I think her opinion adds a really important dimension to this case. It reminds us that these legal decisions aren't just about numbers. There are real people at the heart of it all.
That's so true. Well, this case has been quite a journey, but I feel like we've really explored it, you know, learned about how the law works in the real world, all the gray areas, the different arguments, and ultimately the human stories at the center of everything.
Couldn't have put it better myself. Duncan versus Kansas City Southern Railway, it shows us that the law is always changing, always being shaped by new cases and new ways of looking at things. It's a reminder of how powerful legal precedent is, and how even one single case can have a big impact on how we deal with similar situations in the future.
I think that's the perfect note to end on. Listeners, if you want to dive even deeper into this case, we've got some resources linked in the show notes. And as always, keep those legal minds sharp, and we'll see you on our next deep dive.